Visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life.
There is an elevator.
SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just got invited to the prom. Do you A, meet her date?
I need to see your past date report cards, your driver's license, a list of references, and this hair sample.
B, help her pick out a dress.
Don't you just love the long sleeves and turtleneck on this pantsuit?
Ugh.
C, attend the prom undercover.
Mom, what are you doing here?
I'm not Mom, I'm Calvin, the new kid at school.
Or D, capture her big moment.
Let's take a photo of you two. I'm in the middle.
When it comes to parenting, there are no perfect answers. But that's okay, because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Bedford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the I must talk to the DJ urgently emergency line. Because I can't press buttons and talk and do everything that is expected of me just with two hands. It just doesn't work. Radio was not built for humans. Radio was not built for like a single human being to come in and operate things. It requires a couple of people. I do want to say it is awesome to see Chris Earle back on the air, back here in the station. I've missed him incredibly, and it's good to have him. And a programming note, there will be the continuation of a WMFO holiday tradition. We will be doing a Thanksgiving Eve show. I will be bringing folks in. We will be going over the Black Friday deals and having a wonderful Thanksgiving reunion, as it were. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be 2 weeks from tonight, if you can believe it. Order your turkey if you haven't ordered your turkey, because they're going to be gone. You're going to wind up going to the supermarket and getting that butterball, and no one is happy with that. Anyone who tells you they are happy with that is humoring you. The butterballs are as bad as my Thanksgiving gravy. And my Thanksgiving gravy has a reputation for being the worst for a good reason. Coming up later tonight, I am going to get to that... article that was written by Martin Scorsese last week, because it's too important for me not to talk about. As a film fan, as a student of pop culture, what Martin Scorsese had to say is pretty resonant, pretty important, pretty meaningful, pretty worthwhile. So we'll be talking about that later tonight. Before I start out this week, I am now Derek with the bad knee. It was bad, not as bad as Chris. Chris is recovering from knee surgery. He had his knee put back together. I fell on train tracks and bashed myself up. I am down to one bad knee now, and actually picking up some speed as I walk around. So I am on the mend, as I expected I would be. I wish it was faster, because it drives me crazy not being able to get around as fast as I'd like to. But I'm getting there. It doesn't seem to be anything permanent, so that's good. But in local news that you may actually care about, because no one wants to hear the DJ's problems. Partial relief from Governor Baker's ill-advised vaping ban. Cannabis regulators quarantine most marijuana vaping products. This is from WBUR.org. They're not bad. As far as local news goes, these guys are actually kind of picking up the ball that has been dropped by outlets such as CBS Boston and the Boston Herald, which now run three sentences and a headline. And you sit there and you read the story and you say, I didn't learn anything here. I could have just read the headline and moved on. I think that's the next evolution of those news outlets, is they're just going to run headlines and a photo and that's it. Someone else will provide the actual news. But WBUR.org is still putting up some good news, good information, and this is what they have to say. As the governor's ban on the sale of vaping products lifted at noontime Tuesday for medical marijuana patients, that was noontime Tuesday, that was yesterday, the Cannabis Control Commission stepped in and ordered a quarantine of all marijuana vaping products except those that vaporize flower for medical patients. So, no oil, no concentrates, none, you know, no aerosols, none of the funny stuff. You can get products that vape flower if you have a prescription, medical only. The indefinite quarantine of all marijuana products and devices that rely on vaporization or aerosolization, including but not limited to vape pens, vape cartridges, aerosol products, and inhalers, will keep oil-based vaping cartridges off the shelves of marijuana stores, even for medical marijuana patients. You might as well smoke. And there are some people who really just can't for various reasons. They don't want to. They don't like to. It doesn't agree with them. They don't tolerate it well. I don't know what aerosolized flower does for you that, you know, smoking a blunt doesn't do for you, but here we are. CCC executive, that's the Cannabis Control Commission, executive director Sean Collins, ordered the quarantine, quote, based on his determination that these products pose an immediate or serious threat to the public health, safety, or welfare, and that the quarantine is necessary to protect the public health, safety, or welfare. They got the public health, safety, or welfare in there twice, in one sentence, in one quote. Well done, CCC Executive Director Sean Collins. The order also states that Collins, quote, has determined that the additional testing of certain products for vitamin E acetate and other substances of concern and the development of additional regulatory and policy safeguards is necessary to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. Not the public health, safety, or welfare, but the public health, safety, and welfare. Director Collins is really about the public health, safety, and or welfare. Not or as an alternative, but he's about all three. Public health, safety, and welfare. Superior Court Judge Douglas Wilkins ruled last week that the Cannabis Control Commission, not the Department of Public Health, has the sole authority to regulate the sale of marijuana vaping products for patients and gave the agency a week to either adopt its own emergency regulations to keep the ban in place or take some other action. The Cannabis Control Commission last week affirmed Collins' authority to order a quarantine, and he suggested that he was leaning toward a quarantine of oil-based cartridges. Quote, if the ban were to be lifted, I would have every intention of deploying any tool that we have to ensure that product that may not be safe for consumers or patients does not reach the marketplace, Collins said during the meeting. We can assume from that statement that Collins is acting in the interests of the public health, safety, and welfare. The quarantine, which is to remain in effect until the Cannabis Control Commission amends or rescinds it, comes on the heels of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control announcing that its investigation into the nationwide rash of vaping-related lung illnesses has found direct evidence of vitamin E acetate at the primary site of injury within the lungs. This is the development that we've been looking for. And I'm going to jump over to that story. But as far as before I jump all the way into that, the governor's vaping ban, at least as far as medical marijuana products are concerned, was illegal. It was unconstitutional. He didn't even have the authority to issue that. And of course, there are two fights going in the state right now. One is on whether or not e-cigarettes should continue to be banned. The other is over whether or not we're going to ban menthol cigarettes because apparently our minority communities are not smart enough to know the dangers of smoking, and therefore the magical white people need to ride in and save them. That's pretty much what the state public health commissioner said the other day. So the CDC has made a breakthrough discovery in this in these cases of vaping illness. And this is from thescientist.com, and I'm going to amend this with a little bit from the CDC itself, because nobody really has all of the details on this quite right in the reporting. But thescientist.com had a pretty good summary of what happened. And they say this: health officials at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have identified vitamin E acetate as a possible culprit in the recent string of vaping-related illnesses and deaths, according to a news briefing on Friday. That was November 8th. The finding was also published in the CDC's weekly Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, which you should read, because morbidity and mortality is something you want to keep yourself aware of. So far this year, vaping-related lung injury has sickened 2,051 people across the U.S. and been tied to 40 deaths. The majority of the affected patients are teenage boys and young men, according to STAT, which is another medical journal. The new report was based on data from samples of lung fluid taken from 29 patients, including two who died. Vitamin E acetate was found in every sample. Every sample. So they test 29 lungs. They find 29 cases of vitamin E acetate in those lungs. THC was present in 23 of 28 samples tested, and nicotine in 16 of 26 samples. The affected patients were more likely to vape THC than nicotine, to vape more than five times per day, and to buy THC-containing products from informal sources such as dealers, according to the New York Times. Vitamin E acetate, a sticky substance used in supplements and skin creams, does not appear to cause harm to the body when taken orally or used on the skin. But research has shown that inhaling it could impair lung functioning, reports Associated Press. It is unknown how much the chemical is used in vaping products. So going over to what the CDC actually said, and this is written in some serious medicalese. So if you don't understand medical lingo, you may have a tough time getting through this. I'm only going to give you a small piece of it, and I'm going to explain it to you. If you know this, then you can ignore my explanations or maybe correct me. But I'm pretty sure I've got all this right. This is important information that you need to know. Okay. If you are vaping, despite the warnings, if you're going up to New Hampshire to get your vapes or whatever you're doing, if you're vaping, this is what you need to know. The CDC has been monitoring these vaping related illnesses since the summer, and we've been following that story very closely here. So in their Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Journal, they offered a summary of their investigation. And they've given the illness a name, which is terrible. I came up with some good options for them. They've decided to call it e-cigarette or vaping product use associated lung injury, or EVALI. EVALI. EVALI? EVALI. EVALI. That's what they're calling it. That's your vaping illness. Yeah, you could have called it, like, you know, vape. You have vape-associated pulmonary... I can think of an E or something. There's got to be something better than EVALI. But that's what we got, EVALI. Bronchoscopy and Oh, boy. I hate medical language. Bronchoscopy and bronchoalveolar lavage, BAL, can be part of the clinical and diagnostic workup of EVALI patients. Now, what bronchoscopy and bronchoalveolar lavage are is taking the lung and extracting fluid from it. Okay, so they've got someone's died. This is done as part of a postmortem examination or an autopsy. And they go in and they draw fluid from the lungs. And they say, okay, let's see what's in here. So this is what they did. They used bronchoscopy and bronchoalveolar lavage to investigate the contents of the lungs of 29 people who had died. And this is what they found. Vitamin E acetate was detected in all 29 patient BAL samples. That's the abbreviation for bronchoscopy and bronchoalveolar lavage. It's BAL. Vitamin E acetate was detected in all 29 patient BAL samples. Among 23 patients for whom self-reported THC use information was available, 20 reported using THC-containing products. THC or its metabolites were detected in 23 of 28 patient BAL samples, including in those of 3 patients who said they did not use THC products. Here we come to one problem in this, okay? Let me give you this last sentence again. THC or its metabolites were detected in 23 of 28 patient BAL samples, including in those of 3 patients who said they did not use THC products. Folks, if you are going to the doctor with an illness, you have to be honest. You have to tell the doctor everything. You have to divulge all of your dirty little secrets, okay? The police are not going to run into the room and say, pot user, and haul you off to jail. Your parents aren't going to run into the room and start smacking you around and saying, I knew you were smoking the ganja. You have to tell the truth, especially in a situation like this where THC products may be a culprit. So we got 3 patients out of 23, okay? That's a tenth, one-tenth of the patients lied about using THC. And they found THC in their lungs. There's only one way it's getting in there. Maybe they're using edibles. I don't think so. You know, it's possible that you would get some trace amounts if you had blood in the lungs, that you'd get some trace amounts from edibles or something like that. But if they're finding THC in your lungs, pretty good bet that you're smoking the J's, okay? Or you're vaping the J's. You're vaping the Mary Jane. You have to be honest. Tell the doctor what the heck is going on. I'll give you a story. All right. I walked into my doctor's a doctor's office with a very, very badly abscessed tooth on New Year's Eve. And I'd actually cracked the tooth 2 weeks earlier, and it had gotten infected. And the side of my face blew up. I looked like Richard Nixon on one side. And I walk in and they're like, have you been using anything for this? And I'm like, yes, I had some codeine left over from a previous oral surgery and I've been taking that. And I'm sorry. And they're like, no, we get it. We understand. They want to know. They want to know because it affects your treatment and it impacts what they're going to look for. You have to be honest with your doctor. Okay. If you're vaping THC, tell your doctor, especially if you're going in with a lung problem. Nicotine metabolites were detected in 16 of 26 patient BAL specimens. Results for plant oils, MCT oil, petroleum distillates, and diluent terpenes, and watch out for those diluent terpenes, were all below analyte-specific levels of detection, typically in the low NGML range, which means they can rule out plant oils, MCT oil, petroleum distillates, and diluent terpenes. They found them in some cases. They didn't find enough of them to say this is the culprit. So what they've come back with, the CDC's theory right now, is that vitamin E acetate, which is cheap, okay? It is a cheap industrial liquid vitamin that gets thrown into all kinds of things. It's in skin cream. It's in lip balm. It's in some shampoos. It's in all kinds of stuff that you'd put on your body. And it's been tested by the FDA. It's safe. So they were using vitamin E acetate as a thickener for vape oil. And basically saying, you know, it burns well. It doesn't have any unpleasant smell. Seems to be okay. And people who were heavy vapers, it seems to be a common thread here. People who were heavy vapers were getting a buildup of vitamin E acetate in the lungs. Because the stuff gets in there, it doesn't come out. It hangs around. Your body doesn't just sort of shuffle it off or absorb it or do anything with it. It just sits there and sticks in your lungs. And it's causing severe lung irritation, and it's causing people's lungs to shut down. That is the working theory on what's happening right now. They haven't ruled out the possibility that simply vaping THC is a problem. But they do have a connection, 29 samples, 29 cases where vitamin E acetate was found. Now, could turn out to be completely benign. They haven't ruled that out yet. And they are moving on, most likely, to animal trials to try and determine if vitamin E acetate is, in fact, the culprit. So here's what you need to know. You should not be using any kind of vape oil right now, whether it is commercially made, black market, you bought it in New Hampshire, it fell off the van, you got it from a friend. Don't use the stuff. Because vitamin E acetate is a product that is in a lot of things, okay? It is not regulated. It's not banned from human consumption. And what we're learning here is potentially something new. That vitamin E acetate is perfectly fine for people unless you vaporize it and inhale it. And then it becomes lethal in large enough quantities. But you never know what the quantity is. So the sound advice is to avoid vaping. And I don't care if it's a Juul. I don't care if it's a commercial product. I don't care if it's from a vape shop. You really want to stay away from vaping until they get their heads around whatever this problem is. That is the smart thing to do. We have a culprit now. If there are products that are out there that don't contain vitamin E acetate, in theory, those might be okay. And I know this is a reversal for me, because early on I was saying, look, the CDC is drawing some lines around this. They've been talking about vitamin E acetate from the very beginning. And they've been talking about black market vape products from the beginning. Now, if somebody could prove, you know, hey, Juul, no vitamin E acetate. You know, Vuse, no vitamin E acetate. Maybe it's okay to use those products. But the safe thing to do is to not vape at this point. Don't vape THC. Don't vape e-cigarettes. Don't vape. I still cannot defend the governor's ban. I really cannot defend the governor's ban because it's unconstitutional, as I've pointed out. But the other problem that we have is it's done with no community input. It's done with no business input, right? This has morphed from a temporary 4-month ban on vaping, which was an overreach, to now, hey, let's ban menthol cigarettes. Wait a minute. Where's that coming from? This is government overreach. The government does not have the right to suddenly ban a legal product. And it remains shocking to me that the major cigarette manufacturers, you know, where's Lorillard? Where's R.J. Reynolds? Where's Philip Morris while this is going on? Why aren't they rolling in here with their lobbyists and telling the government of Massachusetts, no, you're not going to do that. And we're going to take you to federal court the second you try and pass that ban. Interstate Commerce Clause. You don't have a right to ban this. I mean, there is an exception there where the government can initiate a ban for public welfare. But in the case of menthol cigarettes, there's no public health emergency other than the one that's been going on since the 1960s when we first realized that cigarettes cause lung cancer and emphysema and heart disease and a host of other bad things. If the government wants to ban cigarettes, if the Massachusetts government wants to ban cigarettes, that is the sort of thing that should come from the legislature, not an executive order from the governor's office. Now, with the menthol ban and the flavored tobacco ban, you know, because our black and brown communities are incapable of recognizing that cigarettes are bad for them, so the magical white people need to ride in and save them. In that case, that bill is at least going through the legislature and is the subject of a public hearing. There were a number of student activists, people who are too young to vote, who were out arguing against cigarettes. And look, you want to be young, you want to be an activist, you want to take a position, that's fine. Okay? I would suggest that if you are under the age of 21, if you are and you hear this, you know, women talk all the time about how men should not have a say in whether or not abortion is illegal. And I think there's a strong case to be made there. I'll say the same thing about people under 21 advocating that cigarettes should be banned. okay? This doesn't affect you. You can't even buy these legally, okay? If you have people in your school who are smoking cigarettes or who are vaping, what you want to do is go ask your local police department, go ask your local public health commission, maybe ask the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, your legislators, why the laws aren't being enforced. Where is the enforcement? Go ask that question. Don't ban something that is a legal product. Because believe me, you do not want to be the one state that bans cigarettes surrounded by states where they're legal. Because you wind up with the same problem that we have with fireworks, right? Which is fireworks are legal in all of the states around us. And every 4th of July, everyone is lighting off fireworks. And Massachusetts is losing on the tax revenue and suffering all the consequences. We have the same number of fires, same number of people blowing themselves up, same number of people going to the emergency room. Cigarettes are legal. If we want to talk about a national ban on cigarettes, that's a conversation that's worth having. Maybe we are at a point right now where we should talk about banning cigarettes in the United States of America. I'm okay with that. I say that as a smoker. You know, I do have a horse in this race. But if the government turned around tomorrow and said smoking is illegal, fine, I'll stop smoking. I'll go smoke marijuana because then I'll get my little, you know, I'll get my little smoker enjoyment out of it, and I'll get a marijuana lift. That's a win. And it's so bizarre that we're moving in opposite directions on these two things. We're simultaneously legalizing marijuana all over the country, and now we have Massachusetts trying to ban cigarettes that have been legal for decades. Menthol has been around for decades. Menthol is not what anyone would consider. I mean, it is a flavored cigarette. But it's not the same thing as, you know, the cherry flavor and the hot fudge sundae flavor and all of the candy flavors that they come out with, which maybe they're deliberately marketed to kids. Maybe they're not. I'm not going to jump to that conclusion. OK, I think those products are developed and marketed because they sell. And the people who are selling the cigarettes, Philip Morris, Laura Lard, R.J. Reynolds, the big tobacco companies, they don't know who the end buyer is. They're not sitting there saying, hey, what's the most popular flavor among 16-year-olds? Because that's illegal, and they know that's illegal. They're putting flavored cigarettes out and flavored vapes out and flavored tobacco out because people buy it, because there's a market for it, because they're doing anything they possibly can. Keep in mind, smoking was going down for a long time in the United States of America. And e-cigarettes started to bring it back again. It started to revitalize that industry. And flavored vapes played a big role in revitalizing that industry. So they're sitting around saying, hey, people are buying our stuff again. Can we get, you know, more flavors out? And then you find out that it's middle school kids who are buying it. Well, did they deliberately manufacture this product to appeal to middle school students? If they did, that's evil, okay? They should be hauled in front of Congress and potentially thrown in jail for doing that. But I don't think that's the case here because there's a tremendous amount of distance between the executives making the decisions and the people on the streets who are actually buying this stuff. So if you want to talk about a full ban on cigarettes, I'm fine with that. If you want to talk about a racist ban on menthol, because our black and brown, and this is what the state health inspector, the director of the Department of Health said. You know, these are targeted at minority communities. Okay, what do you mean by that? That people in minority communities can't have something they enjoy? That they're not intelligent enough to recognize that a cigarette is bad for them? And so magical white woman needs to ride in and save them? Is that your argument? That's not an argument I can get on board with. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that particular set of issues in the near future on this show in a little bit. But before that, Scott Brown, former candidate for Senate, ran against Elizabeth Warren, lost, did win He was the lone Republican senator from Massachusetts in my lifetime. Lost re-election to Elizabeth Brown and became ambassador to New Zealand under President Trump, who he supported. His ambassadorship is going to end in the near future, and he has a new gig. He has been appointed dean of the New England School of Law, which is in Boston. And that's not going down terribly well with the enlightened student body over there. This from the Boston Globe. Student petition opposes Scott Brown's appointment as next president of New England Law. Now, 30-30-40. I have to bring this up again. This is an important set of numbers. 30-30-40. And it is going to play a role here. Those of you who know the show know what I mean by that. 30-30-40. 30% of the country, these are back-of-the-envelope numbers, but historically they hold up. 30% of the country is Democrats, 30% of the country is Republicans, 40% of the country is independents. So if you get 30% of anybody doing anything, that's meaningless. Those are partisans, okay? And partisans are going to fall in line with what the other partisans are doing. It's when you start getting into numbers like 60% that things become meaningful. Because now you have a, either you're pulling some interest from the other side, right? In addition to your 30%. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about Republicans or Democrats here. When we talk about 60% of Americans are in favor of or opposed to whatever, not only do you have that 30% base locked in, either left or right, but you're probably pulling some from the opposite side, and you are pulling a majority of independents. So when 60% of Americans, even when 55% of Americans, or 55% of any group gets behind a single position or a single idea, that is a politically significant majority that is very difficult to break. And this is going to come up in this story. More than 150 students, remember that number, 150. More than 150 students at New England Law Boston appear to have signed a petition demanding the school's Board of Trustees reverse its decision to appoint Scott Brown dean and president. Scott Brown, former United States Senator, current United States Ambassador, long-term volunteer with the United States National Guard. Someone who has served his country with distinction in many different ways. More than 150 students appear to have signed a petition demanding the school's Board of Trustees reverse its decision to appoint Scott Brown dean and president. Yeah, because you don't want a guy as your school's dean who's served the nation. You don't want a guy who's been to Washington. You don't want a guy who, well into middle age, past the point where most people drop out of the National Guard, stayed in the National Guard and kept on serving his country. You don't want that guy. No. You don't want that guy. The letter excoriating, nice adjective or nice verb from the Globe. The letter excoriating Brown's political stances, endorsement of President Trump, and service in his administration had 165 signatures as of Monday afternoon, according to its primary author. 3 days after the school announced the former U.S. Senator and current U.S. Ambassador to New Zealand would lead the 725-student law school. 725 students, 165 signatures. That's what? Little under 30%. It's a little under 30%. So now we know where this is coming from. A group of hardcore partisans have decided that a distinguished American, a highly accomplished American, who has worked as a lawyer, who has been a United States senator, who has been a Massachusetts state representative, who has served the National Guard for most of his adult life, is unfit to be their dean because they don't like Trump. I don't know what they're teaching in the high schools, and I don't know what they're teaching in the colleges, but they need to stop and start teaching adulthood. Quote, Ambassador Brown cannot serve as the Dean of New England Law Boston when his political and moral beliefs are so repugnant to those of the student body and the legal institution itself, the petition said. I tell you, if I'm the dean of that school, right, I'm probably pulling these kids in and sending them to sensitivity training. Try and teach them some empathy. Try and teach them to understand that people who you disagree with can still be good leaders. New England School of Law is doing the right thing, however. The school is standing by its pick, says the Globe. Brown is set to take the reins in 13 months. Jennifer Kelly, a spokeswoman for New England Law, said the school conducted a thorough national search, considered more than 100 candidates, then narrowed the field down to three. Quote, the finalists were interviewed by the faculty and department heads in an open forum, and their feedback was considered by the board before its vote, she said. Kelly added that in recent days, students, faculty, and alumni have shared their excitement about the choice of Brown. Quote, we value the feedback of students, positive and negative, and plan to provide a community forum at some point to discuss their views. We look forward to Ambassador Brown leading New England's law towards an exciting future. Kelly said that although many names signed on to the petition looked familiar to her, the school's registrar wasn't able to confirm each name on Monday, a federal and school holiday. In an email, the ambassador referred to what he told the Globe in a telephone interview last week. At that time, Brown said that as a Republican, taking the helm of a school in the heart of Boston, he hopes that his new community at New England Law would give him a fair shot when he starts more than a year from now. Quote, I'll certainly meet with every employee, every faculty member, he said, adding that he will work to figure out what's the vision, what do we need to succeed, how can we get to consensus. The law school was founded in 1908 and for the education of women, went co-ed 30 years later and took its current name in 2008. Students involved in the petition lauded its diversity and inclusivity. The letter offered a laundry list of criticisms of Brown's record, from his opposition to gay marriage, which he did not oppose as a state senator, to his support of a 2005 bill that would have mandated that women seeking abortions be provided with color photographs or realistic drawings of the unborn child at 2-week gestational increments from fertilization to full term. Brown has long said that he supports abortion rights and was a key vote in the U.S. Senate on allowing gay men and women to serve openly in the military. Dylan Lang, the student who started the anti-Brown push, said he felt compelled to act after the Board of Trustees' decision. Given Brown's record and his, quote, his support of the Trump administration, which disregards the rule of law and basic human rights, I just don't think he belongs in our community, Lang said in a telephone interview. Well, you know what? You are not, I will respect your misinformed opinion. And the first thing that I will say to Dylan Lang is go out and get your facts before you start writing letters and whipping people up into a frenzy, okay? 2 minutes on the internet does not tell you who somebody is. Newsflash. 2 minutes on the internet does not tell you who somebody is. Number two. Before you go ahead and publish this letter demanding that he resign, ask yourself who appointed you, a 4-year college student who will be gone after graduation. He's actually going to graduate in the spring, Dylan Lang. Who appointed you as the decider of what the university's future should be? No one's saying you shouldn't have a voice. No one's saying that you shouldn't raise the question. But there are ways to do it. And this is not the way to do it. Some members of the New England law community, however, feel that the ambassador is a good pick to lead the institution. Quote, his political views as a Reagan conservative make him perfect for an administrator position as he represents both sides of the political spectrum, said student Michael Mayer Haddad in a quote provided by the New England law spokesman and confirmed by Haddad. Quote, I do not think Brown will make New England law a less diverse, less inclusive place. No, he won't. His record shows that. Quote, I think we ended up with a candidate with incredible leadership qualities, enthusiasm, a great listener, said Lisa R. Freudenheim, a professor at the school who was on the search committee. A longtime Massachusetts state representative and state senator, Brown won an upset victory for U.S. Senate over Democrat Martha Coakley in 2010, but lost his 2012 re-election bid to Elizabeth Warren. He worked for law firm Nixon Peabody LLP for several months as he made frequent visits to New Hampshire. Eventually, Brown and his wife, former WCVB-TV and broadcaster Gail Huff, moved to their vacation home in Rye, New Hampshire, and Brown ran unsuccessfully for Senate in 2014 against incumbent U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen of New Hampshire. In 2016, he endorsed Trump just before the New Hampshire presidential primary. Then he got the New Zealand ambassadorship. Brown's appointment as dean elicited supportive statements last week from Massachusetts' top two Republicans, Governor Charlie Baker and Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito. And late Friday, a top Democrat also offered support. Quote, "Welcome back to Massachusetts, Ambassador at Senator Scott Brown and Gail." Elizabeth Warren tweeted Friday, linking to a story about his appointment. Quote, "I know it will be good for New England law, Boston, to have a dynamic leader." Yes, Elizabeth Warren. Granny Warren. Progressive Elizabeth Warren supports Scott Brown. Yet 165 college students don't. Why is that? Is it because they are truly and rightfully morally opposed to Scott Brown? I don't know. On Scott Brown, I watched his career before he went off an ambassador. Scott Brown is about the most middle of the road, uncontroversial guy you could imagine. You know, one of the issues with Scott Brown is like the guy isn't that exciting as a politician. You look at the guy and you're like, that's a smart guy. That's a guy who's a good leader, makes good decisions. But this guy over here is screaming and yelling and getting me all riled up. So I think I'm more interested in that guy. That was Scott Brown's problem. You know, Scott Brown could not break through against Elizabeth Warren because Elizabeth Warren's walking around screaming and yelling about everything. And everybody's saying, yeah, we hate Washington. We hate the government. We hate that. We hate our student loans. Scott Brown's like, fiscally responsive leadership. And they're like, we hate student loans. We hate Washington. And they all run and vote for Warren. That's the biggest issue with Scott Brown. And here we have college students, okay, who are supposed to be, isn't college supposed to be about the free and open exchange of ideas? Maybe not. Maybe not. Because there is another thing that came out. And this is horrifying. And this is another example of what's going on our college campuses. This is from Reason. And Reason is a conservative outlet. I'm not going to argue it. Broken Clock is right twice a day. Everybody has some good journalist working for them. And they offer the correct perspective on this story. And this is the headline. The Daily Northwestern apologizes to students for reporting news that triggered them. A newspaper staffed by the country's most famous journalism school, arguable, says it shouldn't have covered a Jeff Sessions event. The Daily Northwestern is the student newspaper of Northwestern University, which is home to the Medill School of Journalism, one of the best regarded journalism schools in the country. That is true. They're up there with Columbia, okay? In the Midwest. Yeah, this is a top journalism school. Many Medill students work at the paper reporting on the news. And this is one of those student newspapers that will occasionally win a Pulitzer Prize because they have people who are really serious about building a career as journalists working on it. At least that's what they used to do. If a recent editorial co-signed by the paper's top editors is to be believed, the Daily Northwestern will no longer fully report on campus events if the reporting runs the risk of making marginalized students feel unsafe or upset. This is no exaggeration. The incident that generated this sniveling, embarrassing apology was a recent visit to campus by former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Sessions addressed the college Republicans while student activists protested the speech, objecting to the Trump administration's treatment of immigrants. Some of the activists were apparently dissatisfied with the way the Daily Northwestern covered the event. This is not such a surprise. Activists are often dissatisfied when student papers maintain any objectivity whatsoever, as they believe that good journalism must itself be aligned with activist goals. At Harvard University, for example, student activists, as well as the student government, have demanded that the Harvard Crimson stop quoting U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement in articles about pro-immigration rallies. To its great shame, The Daily Northwestern has apparently decided to cave to completely unreasonable demands. From the editorial, and this I started out studying journalism, so this hurts. This is a Daily Northwestern editorial board. On November 5th, former Attorney General Jeff Sessions spoke on campus at a Northwestern University College Republicans event. The Daily sent a reporter to cover that talk and another to cover the students protesting his invitation to campus, along with a photographer. We recognize that we contributed to the harm students experienced, and we wanted to apologize for and address the mistakes that we made that night, along with how we plan to move forward. One area of our reporting that harmed many students was our photo coverage of the event. Some protesters found photos posted to reporters' Twitter accounts re-traumatizing and invasive. I don't know that I can go on reading this, because this is a triple extra large horse shirt. I need to send some horse shirts over to the Daily Northwestern. Those photos have since been taken down. On one hand, as the paper of record for Northwestern, we want to ensure students, administrators, and alumni understand the gravity of the events that took place Tuesday night. However, we decided to prioritize the trust and safety of students who were photographed. What? Is this an Amish school? I don't know anyone else who's being traumatized by a photograph being taken. We feel that covering traumatic events... What is a traumatic event? Jeff Sessions came to campus and spoke in a lecture hall. How is that a traumatizing event? I want someone to explain that to me. I want one of these little ninny, I can't handle life, I'm triggered, sensitive millennial snowflakes to explain to me how a man coming to your campus and giving a speech is traumatizing. Get over yourself. Put on your big boy pants, because if this is what you're doing in college, I got news for you. The real world is going to eat you alive. You are going to be curled up in a ball in a cellar with the lights off, wrapped up in a Snuggly, rocking back and forth, crying for mommy, because every time you stick your head out the door, something else triggers you. Toughen up. You're not special. Life is hard. You sometimes have to deal with people who think differently than you do, who have different values than you do. It's called diversity, and it's what you claim to celebrate. We feel that covering traumatic events requires a different response than many other stories. While our goal is to document history and spread information, nothing is more important than ensuring that our fellow students feel safe. And in situations like this, that they are benefiting from our coverage rather than being actively harmed by it. Who is harmed by a news article? You know, back in my day, we had a saying, if you don't like it, change the channel. If you don't like it, don't read it. If the newspaper is upsetting to you, put the newspaper down. This is pure madness. This is absolute insanity. This is a newspaper saying it's not going to cover the news anymore because people might be upset by it. Can you imagine if that had happened on 9/11? If they simply had said, this is too traumatizing, we're not going to tell you what happened. And people are going to New York and they're like, where did those buildings go? Oh, there was a thing. Well, what thing? Well, we're not going to talk about it. We don't talk about it because it upsets people. This isn't even a tragic story. This is a former attorney general comes to campus and gives a speech. And the students are upset that they were photographed. They're being re-traumatized because a photograph appeared in the newspaper. Oh my God, Jeff Sessions is in the newspaper. I'm triggered. Who are these people? How did you get to college? How do you get out of bed in the morning? I don't understand it. We cannot have a society that functions when we start wrapping everything up in bubble wrap and padding everything and childproofing everything and trauma-proofing everything for the most vulnerable members of our community. Nothing will get done. No one will be informed. The Republic will die. That is this path. That is what the Daily Northwestern is doing. There's one sentence in here that's accurate. Our goal is to document history and spread information. Yes, it is. Period. And that should have been your non-apology to the complaints. That should have been your editorial. Our goal is to document history and spread information. Period. Leave the rest of the column blank and just put those words in there. And you will have said everything that you absolutely need to say. No. Instead, what you're saying is, we're not going to cover the news anymore because it might upset people. This is the student newspaper of one of the most prominent journalism schools in the country. Now, I will tell you that I have been getting by recently on the hope that the madness would end in a couple of years. That they were going to flush out, you know, the deadspin writers and the bloggers and all of the amateur, clueless, recent college graduate journalists, quote-unquote journalists, who don't understand journalism, who don't know what they're doing, who are actually activists in disguise. And that we might actually get back to something approaching adult conversation in this country and adult media coverage in this country, where headlines written for 10-year-olds so that they'll get clicks are a thing of the past and actual news and information is what matters. When I see this, I start to realize we're in this for the long haul, because here we have a top journalism school, a respected journalism school, saying we're not going to cover Jeff Sessions anymore because it traumatizes the student body. First of all, the fact that you were traumatized by the visit of Jeff Sessions means you need to go home. You need to pack up your bags and go back home to mommy and daddy and learn how to be a functional human being. Okay? It's that simple. If you can't deal with Jeff Sessions being on your campus, you're not ready. You are not ready to be at college. You are not ready for life. Secondly, it is not the role of the media, never has been the role of the media, to cave to activist pressure. Or to cave to people who say, I'm upset by what you write. Please stop writing it. Those of you who are older, my age, Generation X, boomers, greatest generation, you know the role that the news media has played in our lives. You know that it's shaped the country that we live in. Can you imagine when we were growing up, someone saying, I'm upset by your news coverage, don't cover that anymore? And a newspaper editor or reporter doing anything other than laughing that person out of the room? Can you imagine that? The world does not exist to provide safe spaces for everyone. If you need safe spaces, if you need your little bubble of safety, you can't be out here walking around with the rest of us. Because here's reality. The world is full of sharp corners and sharp edges and sharp people. And they will puncture your little bubble the second you walk out the door. And you have no right to demand that the rest of the world conform to your needs. Is it a noble goal to be kind to people? Yes. At the expense of the news media? No. Under no circumstances. I'm hoping that there will be a follow-up for this where a dean or someone gets involved and says, yeah, you know what? We fired the people that wrote that, and that's not going to be our policy going forward. But I don't think that's what's going to happen here. And keep in mind, these are the people that wrote this are going to be the people bringing you the news 5 years from now. Good luck to us all.
No one. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast. The winter preview continues because we wanted that, right? We wanted ice. Maybe you caught some snow yesterday. It's not going to be quite as bad. Lows are going to be in the 20s tonight. Maybe some teens out in the suburbs. Tomorrow, cloudy, high in the low 40s, lows back around freezing tomorrow night. Friday, we get a break, briefly. Sunny, high in the low 50s, and then the temperature falls back into the mid-20s on Friday night. And on Saturday, Pokemon Community Day, sunny, high of 37. Have fun. Bring a parka if you're out there hunting Chimchar. Lows in the upper 20s. Sunday, cloudy skies. Highs in the low 40s. Lows stay above freezing Sunday night in the mid 30s. So you can look forward to that. It's a warming trend, kids. But this is kind of what we're locked into now. We're not going to see temperatures going up above the 50s probably until spring. Too soon. Too soon. It is WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight, when On the Town with Mikey D, will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 is the emergency telephone number. When we come back, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about important things. I am looking at good story coming out of Detroit, and about trees and why the trees aren't being planted. And the milk industry is dying. If you like milk, you better go buy some more, because they're in trouble over there. That and more when we come back after this.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food. We've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, rethink your behavior. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit savethefood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Lessons falling about and a crackling in the air. Then around the dungeon doors, the shutters and the queues. Everybody's looking for somebody's arms to fall into. That's what it is. That's what it is now. Here's frost on the graves and the monuments, but the taverns are warm in town. People curse the government and shovel hard food down. Lights are out in City Hall, the castle and the keep. The moon shines down upon it all, the legless and the sleepless. Cold on the toll gate, where the wagon's creeping through. Cold on the toll gate, God knows what I can do. That's what it is. That's what it is now. Here the garrison sleeps in the citadel, with the ghosts and the ancient stones. High on the parapet, a Scottish piper stands alone. High on the wind, a Highland drum's beating a roll. Something from the past just comes and stares into my soul. Cold on a toll gate with a Caledonian moon. Cold on a toll gate, God knows what I can do.